William Marbury looked up from his thoughts. From behind the polished mahogany desk in his hotel suite, he watched Red Loman step inside.
Mr. Marbury, Mr. Priest is here. Shall I send him in?
Yes, by all means, Red.
Marbury nodded, catching a glimpse of J.T. Priest already stepping in behind Loman.
That'll be all, Red.
The familiar bulging carpet bag swung back and forth in J.T. Priest's hand. A similar empty carpet bag sat at one end of Marbury's desk.
How are you, Tuck?
I'm good.
Priest looked around the suite at the plush furnishings and decor as he backed to a leather cushioned chair and sat down.
Not this good, but good.
Trappings, simply trappings. I found that one must look successful in order to be successful.
I'm sure that's true.
Marbury looked down at the carpet bag, then back up at J.T. Priest.
All right, talk to me, Tuck.
J.T. Priest shoved the carpet bag over beside Marbury's feet with a casual sweep of his boot.
$322,000. All right there. That's 30 more than we'd anticipated.
Oh? Well, that is a bit of a bonus, then.
He leaned forward and pulled the empty carpet bag from beside the desk and slid it over to Priest to be used for their next get-together.
Yes, I knew you'd be glad to hear it. Apparently, the bank had issued more credit to the government for Indian beef supply than we thought over the past year. I love getting paid for beef we never delivered.
So do I. Especially after the last few jobs had brought in less than we thought. I trust we won't be hearing any more from our friend Lyle Devers, then.
I took care of him. You needn't worry.
I'm afraid we're going to be out of the government beef business for a while. Only until the Senate investigations are concluded. According to my source in the Bureau of Indian Affairs, some heads are going to roll over beef that was paid for and never received. Not our heads, of course. Now that Lyle Devers won't have a chance to tell them anything. You see, Tuck, information like that costs us plenty, but it's worth it. The more important people we have in our pockets, the larger our pockets grow. So I've always got to have plenty of cash money to take care of our friends in Washington.
Yes, I understand. The money will always be here. You can count on it.
Yes, I'm sure I can. But let's be careful. We don't ever want to be overconfident or let ourselves grow lax. This is still a risky business, Tuck. I'd hate to see you back in a saddle, beating a trail out of town with nothing but the shirt on your back.
That will never happen, Marbury. Is everything all right? It's been a while since we met in person. You seem distracted.
Distracted. Things are going very well. Very well indeed.
Marbury took out a handful of folded telegrams from inside his jacket pocket.
Then last week, I started getting these.
Marbury spread the first telegram open.
Cleveland Phelps. He says here that you killed Coleman Hart. Brought two lawmen down on the old English spread and caused us to lose the arms shipment in a fire.
He said that? In an open telegram?
Don't be absurd. He told me Coleman Hart was dead, that his killer took his ears. I knew what he meant. Then he told me about the fire at the old English, and in his own way, how it all came about.
Well, I did kill Coleman Hart. He rode in on us. I had to. But I had no idea about the arms shipment burning up. Why didn't somebody get in touch with me? We can't stand losses like that.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. I've made arrangements to have another load of guns delivered to the old English spread. Believe me, we don't dare disappoint the Mexican federales.
Marbury stared at him, opening another telegram.
Again, from Cleveland Phelps. Says here that three men were shot down in the street at Little Red Springs. I get his drift. He's telling me you sent three men out to die when all you had to do was slip out of town. Why would you do something like that?
Phelps knew about that? How did he know what happened? I didn't see him there.
Of course you didn't see him, because he's not an idiot. He laid low, then got out of there. He lined up three local shooters to take care of those two lawmen. Do you realize what all this is going to cost us, hiring outside gunmen? Now Phelps is gathering his own men together in case something goes wrong. The tab on this keeps growing higher and higher.
Marbury, I...
Finally, this one from you the other day. You confirm the part about the three men in Little Red Springs. You tell me you're traveling with Quick Charlie Sims. Quick Charlie? Charlie the Wizard of all people? Have you lost your mind? After what you did to him in Creed, why on earth would you take a chance having him around you? For God's sake, Tuck, you're sleeping with Kate McCorkle.
Hold it, boss. Sims has no idea that I set him up. As far as him and Kate, there's nothing there. He told me so himself.
He told you so.
We're always needing good men. Sims is good at what he does. You can't deny that.
Oh, yes. He's good at what he does, all right. But what exactly is it that he does? He's not a bank robber. He made that clear enough to you in Colorado. I'll tell you what he does, Tuck. He finds a way to weasel himself into anybody's business who's fool enough to have anything to do with him.
I can see through his every move. Sims is down and out and trying to scheme his way into something. You can't blame him for that. He's not so slick anymore, either. He lost $50 to one of the boys playing checkers. Hell, I even saw him lose at poker. He's not so hard to handle.
Down and out? Nobody can handle Sims, Tuck. Not me, not you, nobody. Of course you see through his every move. Anybody can if he lets them. That's part of his illusion, his way of drawing you in. He shows you what you want to see just to make you think you're a step ahead of him. But what you see is never quite what's really going on. There's always some poor fool who comes forward thinking they've got Sims pegged. And that's the kind of person he feeds on.
Jesus, boss. You saying I don't know my job? That I don't have enough sense to handle my end of things?
Okay, Tuck. I see what it is now. I see why you let that grifter into things. It's not about Sims. This is about you and me and how we've set this thing up. Being around Sims has made you start thinking maybe you should be bigger in all this than you are. Am I right?
Hey, boss, come on. I'm not complaining. We got a good operation going on here. I got my own Pullman car, plenty of money.
Right. But something's missing. You didn't even realize it until Sims showed up, right? Now, somehow, he's gotten under your skin. You need to impress this two-bit grifter some way. See, Tuck, that's the way this guy works. Are you starting to get the picture?
Maybe you're right. We got no place for Quick Charlie Sims. I'll get rid of him in Chicago once I pick up some more men.
Get rid of him how?
You know, have one of the boys put a bullet in his head and drop him in the river.
Good idea. Then you get with Cleveland Phelps and his men and deal with these two lawmen before we get them any farther down our shirts. Whatever mess is out there, I want it cleaned up, understand? And no more fooling around. Your job is to keep cash coming into this operation. We're only as big as our bankroll.
Sure, sure. We shouldn't be too worried about the two lawmen, though. They'd have a long, hard climb to get to us. We got ourselves pretty well insulated.
Yes, and I have every intention of keeping us that way. I'm going to have Red Lohman ride along with you to Chicago, just to see if he can be of any help.
What? I don't need some hired gun looking over my shoulder.
Of course you don't. But Red's a good man. It's time someone showed him how we operate in the field.
Why? So he can take over my job someday?
No. Let's just say that two heads are better than one right now. Let him be the one who puts a bullet in Quick Charlie Sims. Once things are cleaned up out there, Red Lohman will come on back here.
I don't like the man, boss. I don't want him with me.
He's going with you, Tuck. And that's that. I'll fill him in on our plans for Quick Charlie Sims. He'll meet you at the train within 1 hour. Wait for him.
I'll keep you informed. And I'm sure Red Lohman will do the same. Aren't you gonna count the money?
Nonsense, Tuck. When did I ever have to count any money you handed me?
Kate hadn't had to hit him that hard.
Quick Charlie Sims tried to lift his head from the floor through a drifting haze of consciousness. He felt something poke him in the chest.
You there. I say, can you hear me?
Sims looked up the shaft of a long hickory golf club. Beyond the far end of the golf club and the hand holding it, he saw an inquisitive face leering down at him.
Yes. I can hear you. Apparently, someone has thwacked this poor devil senseless.
A second face came into view. This one wearing a white walrus mustache and a thick monocle.
Oh my. I hope this isn't going to interfere with our foursome this afternoon.
Who are you people?
Here, poor fellow. Let's get you up from there. I'm Bradford Hines. This is my lynx partner, J. Rudolph Flynn. There now.
They lowered Sims into the chair, and Bradford Hines patted a hand on Sims' bourbon-soaked shoulder.
If I might ask, what has happened here, sir? Should we send for a police officer?
No, no, please, that's not necessary. Ow. I'm, Charlie Simpson. This is just an accident, gentlemen. I hope we can be discreet.
An accident?
Hines took note of the steel cuffs on each of Sims' wrists.
Now, see here, sir. If something untoward has taken place, I think we need to do something about it.
Excuse me, Mr. Hines. Isn't it obvious there's been some rough sport here? If Mr. Simpson says this was an accident...
Rough sport?
J. Rudolph Flynn made the slightest gesture about the room with the golf club. Bradford Hines's face reddened.
Why, yes, of course. An accident of some sort. I have some ice in the cooling chest out in the carriage. Why don't I step out there and get some?
Thanks.
As soon as Bradford Hines left the Pullman car, J. Rudolph Flynn stepped closer and bent down beside Sims.
You don't remember me, do you, Quick Charlie?
Sims only stared at him.
I'm Rudy. Rudy Flynn? We both played in the Yonkers tournament up in New York, remember?
Rudy the Fly. Of course. How's your game, Rudy?
We came here today to find out. A fellow by the name of Priest wired Hines the other day said he had a real hotshot player he wanted to introduce. I'm shooting for Hines these days. Hines had us booked for 18 holes out on the Archibald Estate. He's real excited about it. You know how it goes these days. Every rich old fart has to own his own golf coach. Show ponies is what I call us. I suppose you're past all that, eh?
No, we all do what we have to, Rudy, for the sake of the game.
Speaking of games, I take it we've caught you right in the middle of one here.
Quick Charlie Sims didn't answer.
Never mind. But I owe you one for giving me a couple of breaks in New York. Anything I can do to help?
Yeah, as a matter of fact. Did you see which way the woman ran when she left here?
Which woman was that? The one wearing the...
In the long brown day coat. Dark-haired woman carrying nothing but a thin silk purse. Headed for the northbound on the far side of the station, wasn't she?
Yep. That's the one I saw, all right. I'm pretty sure Bradford Hines saw her too, come to think of it.
Thanks, Rudy. Now I owe you one.
Call us even, Quick Charlie. Us golfers have to stick together for the sake of the game.
Bradford Hines returned with a handful of ice wrapped in a white linen napkin.
Here, Mr. Flynn, perhaps this will ease his pain.
Bradford handed the ice pack over to Rudy the Fly, who in turn passed it to Quick Charlie Sims.
Mr. Simpson was just telling me that the woman we saw in the brown coat did this to him.
What woman?
You know, the one carrying a thin silk purse? Dark hair? Hurrying to the northbound platform?
I'm afraid I didn't see a...
Come now, Mr. Hines. How do you expect to see a ball 100 yards away if you can't see a woman breeze right past us? You're not the kind of man who doesn't notice women, are you?
Well, I... that is... Well, of course I notice women, sir. And yes, I saw her. I simply didn't recall the color of her coat. Now that you mention it, though, it was brown, I'm sure. My. And that woman did this to you? May I dare ask why?
I'd rather not talk about it. Like I said, it was an accident.
Of course, sir.
What accident?
J.T. Priest walked in. Then his eyes went to the broken bottle and the puddle of bourbon. Then to the trunk sitting inside the open doorway. Then to Sims with the ice pack pressed to his head.
Oh, thank heaven you're back, Mr. Priest. Poor Simpson here has had a terrible misfortune. Luckily, Mr. Flynn and I happened by to chat with you before the game.
What's going on here, Mr. Simpson?
I got hit from behind. She's gone. Wouldn't have even known what hit me if it hadn't been for these two. They saw her leaving. In a hurry, they said.
It's true.
Oh, yes, the woman in the brown coat.
She must have been in a big hurry. All she carried was a small purse.
That's not all she was carrying.
Sim's hand had gone to his trouser pocket. Then it came back out, pulling on the empty white pocket lining.
I had almost $80 in poker winnings. It's gone.
Which way did she go?
J. Rudolph Flynn pointed in the direction of the northbound loading platform.
We saw her going that way.
J.T. Priest stalked out of the car.
Well, I suppose this means our game is off this afternoon.
Yes, I'm afraid so. My vision is blurry. I feel like I've been hit by a road wagon. I couldn't walk the course.
Oh, well, what if you simply took along plenty of ice? Perhaps if we looped our arms and carried you...
For crying out loud, can't you see he's in no shape to play golf? I hope we'll get together somewhere in the near future, Mr. Simpson. Mr. Priest has told us so much about you.
Thank you. I'll be looking forward to it.
As Hines left, Rudy the Fly leaned in closer.
I've also heard you're quite a hand at chess and checkers.
I've enjoyed those games on occasion. I appreciate your help, Rudy.
Don't mention it. Let's keep in touch. It's always good to get away from these gentlemen players and get into some real competition.
Moments later, J.T. Priest stalked back into the car, his tie undone.
All right, Sims. Start talking and talk fast. Where is she? I know this is some kind of scheme and you're in on it.
Scheme? J.T., look at me. Do I look like I'm in any position to...
Cut the bull. I'm not falling for it. I'll blow your head off here and now.
Go ahead and shoot, J.T. Ha ha. Be doing me a favor. Throwing in with you and Los Pistoleros was my last chance. If that's over, well, just put me out of my misery. Never had such bad luck in my life. I couldn't even keep from getting my pockets robbed.
You say she hit you while you weren't looking?
Yeah, but it was my fault. I should have been looking. Now, I feel like I let you down, JT. I can't blame you for not believing it. Hell, I can't even believe it myself.
Quick, Charlie. Not as quick as you should be, huh?
Now you don't have to rub it in.
Where do you suppose she went, Sims? She give you any clue lately?
Me? Why would she? She used to talk about Minnesota a lot.
Jesus, Minnesota? Why on earth there?
I don't know why. Accordion music, maybe. Maybe she likes playing in the snow. Maybe she wasn't really headed north. Could be she just mentioned Minnesota to throw us off.
Nah. Hines and Flynn said she was headed for the northbound, so it makes sense. It doesn't matter. I've been expecting something like this, the way she's been acting the past few days. When I run into her, she's dead.
Looks like we got something in common, JT. Both a couple of her used-to-bes.
Sims took on a dejected expression.
You maybe, but I'm not gonna be treated this way by no damn woman.
Well, if you're really gonna shoot me, JT, go ahead. I'm tired of sitting here feeling like a fool.
No, I'm not gonna shoot you, Quick Charlie Sims. Not yet, anyway. Instead, I got something for you to do.
After all that's happened, you still trust me?
I've never trusted you. But if you're on the up and up about what happened here, I'll give you one more chance. Blow it, and you're finished for good.
Anything you say, JT.
Priest looked back at the car door as if to make sure no one could hear him.
There's a gunman called Red Loman coming with us to Chicago. He'll be here any minute. Now, I want you to get rid of him for me. Do that, and you'll be my right-hand man. We might even branch out on our own down the road, start our own operation. How would that play for you?
Oh, that'd be great, JT. Whoa, wait a minute, JT. Surely you don't mean...
Yeah, that's what I mean. Kill him. Any problem with it?
Damn, JT, I'm no assassin. I've never killed a man in my life.
What about the guard you're accused of killing in Creed?
Priest knew full well that Sims hadn't killed that guard.
That was different, JT. I had to kill him in the midst of a robbery. I had no choice. But as far as an assassination, I wouldn't know how to handle something like that.
First time for everything, Sims. Besides, I'm not asking you, I'm telling you. Get rid of him before we reach Chicago, or I'll get rid of you.
All right. I'll do it. I can't believe Kate McCorkle would have put me in a spot like this.
For a man with a reputation for being sharp, you sure have a lot to learn, Sims. I knew the day you joined us that it was only a matter of time before she did something to you. You can't treat people the way you treated her and expect them to just forget all about it. With that temper of hers, you're lucky she didn't cut your throat.
Yeah. I guess you're right, boss. I'll try to remember that from now on.
They'd begun straightening up when Brett Loman stepped on board and walked into the room, carrying a small black leather traveling bag.
Well, Loman, don't just stand there. Take some of these towels and give us a hand. This is Quick Charlie.
Yeah, I've heard of you, Sims. Mr. Mabry didn't send me here to be your chambermaid, JT. We might as well get that straight from the start.
You're riding my train. You'll follow my orders.
I'm riding the corporation's train, not yours. I was sent here to keep an eye on things until you get some more men. And that's exactly what I'll be doing. If you've got any problems, take it up with the boss. Far as I'm concerned, you're just the delivery boy, Priest. Don't make yourself sound bigger than you are.
Well, now. Looks like all that's left here is a little spilt liquor. I'm sure I can manage. You boys go have yourself a drink. Cool out a little.
Do I look like a boy to you, Sims?
Red Loman cocked his head slightly, a cruel grin snaking beneath his bristly red-gray mustache. Sims froze in place, stuck for an answer, carefully sizing Red Loman up. The man had come in strong, letting everybody know to keep their distance. A real tough guy. Sims liked that.
Now, where do I stow my grip bag?
Back in the crummy, with the engineer and fireman's gear. There's beds and a cook stove back there.
The crummy?
Yeah, the caboose.
I know what a crummy is, Sims. Why am I sleeping in one?
Because that's where the hired help sleeps, Loman. You either sleep there or get the hell out of here right now. We'll go right back to Mabry and ask him about it.
All right. Come on, Quick Charlie. Let's see how quick you can carry my grip back to the caboose.
Sure thing, Mr. Loman. Anything I can do to help us get along.
The doctor had told 2 Jack Roth that it would be at least a week before he'd be up and around. But by the end of the third day, Roth had grown restless and began forcing himself up from his bed and pacing the floor of the doctor's office in his long white convalescent gown. On the evening of the fourth day, Sullivan Hart came to see him with a big tray full of food from the restaurant down the street and a large bag under his arm. Roth met him just inside the door, his long black braid undone and his hair glistening wild and unkempt.
Where's my clothes, Sully? If I don't get dressed and out of here, somebody's gonna get hurt.
Take it easy, 2 Jack.
Hart pitched the bag onto the bed.
There's your closing gun belt.
He took a telegram from inside the bib of his shirt and handed it to Roth.
I was gonna show you this after you ate. This came in earlier today from Memphis. Looks like we're headed for Chicago.
Your Morgan horse is in Chicago. Stop. Come and get it. Stop. Signed, Charlie Sims. P.S. He misses you.
I know the horse is not there yet, and neither is Quick Charlie Sims. This is his way of telling us where he's headed. I say we move on it.
Chicago is a big place, Sully.
Does that bother you?
No. As far as I'm concerned, it's only one more cow town, only bigger, with more horse droppings in the street. It could take us some time finding our way around.
We'll have some help. Sheriff Kay checked in with the Chicago police. There's a warrant on Briley Barnes for some old minor theft charge. I doubt if Chicago's that concerned with getting him back, but we're within our rights to transport him there. Nothing says we can't hold him a couple days and make him show us around. He's already told me that he and these other thugs came from a labor contractor, a company called Hughes and Lindsay. I say that's a good place to start. Beats sitting around waiting for Quick Charlie Sims to show his hand. I'd feel better if we weren't following Sims' lead on this.
Me too. But for now, I'd follow the devil himself if it gets us to Los Pistoleros. What about the rest of the prisoners?
Sheriff Kay still has some inquiries out on them. I wired Judge Parker. He said to leave him here. He'll charge them with whatever he can come up with. He's sending out a circuit wagon for them, but it'll be sometime next week before it gets here. I told him we're moving on.
So he approves?
Yep. Only he has no expense money to send us. I talked to the mercantile owner here. He'll lend us some money against our rifles.
That's just great. We have to pawn our shooting gear to afford to track down criminals. This gets better by the minute.
I've also got $30 of my own. Sheriff K will lend us some money from his town discretionary fund. We can sign for our train fare and build the government. We'll make out.
So, Chicago. Makes sense.
Kern said the only people left on this train are Sims, J.T. Priest, and a woman named Kate McCorkle. They need more men? Where would they go?
Anywhere they want to. Gunmen aren't that hard to find. But so far, Chicago seems to be where most of these men are from. By the way, I've got $18 in my saddlebags.
Not anymore, you don't.
What about my horse? I hope you didn't sell it out from under me.
After they'd picked up their horses from the livery barn, they walked them to the hitch rail out in front of the sheriff's office. They stepped up onto the boardwalk.
Do you remember a hard case by the name of Hook Stevens? From over in the Panhandle? Runs with the Bristol brothers, Ernie and Bob Boy.
Yep, I remember them. Arrested Hook Stevens my first year on the job for shooting an old boy in a card game.
Think he'd still be mad at you over it?
I don't know. Why?
Don't look around. But him and the Bristols have had their eyes on us from an alley ever since we passed the mercantile.
Maybe we better ease over there and see what's on their minds.
Wasn't expecting you so soon.
Sheriff K picked up the ring of cell keys and started toward the cell where he'd placed Briley Barnes by himself.
I'll get him ready to go.
Hang on, Sheriff K. We need to use the rear door. We'll be right back.
What's up, deputies?
We're not sure, Sheriff. But stay inside here while we find out.
In the alley alongside the mercantile store, Bob Bristol looked at his older brother, Ernie. Then it hooked Stevens, who stood between him in the shadows, loading a double-barrel shotgun that lay in the crook of his right arm.
Ernie Bristol!
Bristol froze.
Oh, Jesus!
He saw the two lawmen with the evening sun to their backs, Two Jack on the left, his big frame seeming to fill the alley.
I've got Ernie.
All right, boys, either drop him or make him sing.
Wait!
But it was too late. Bob Boy and Hook swung their weapons up. Hart would take no chance on Hook Stevens' big shotgun in a narrow alley. Before Stevens got the 10-gauge up and leveled, two shots hit him in the chest, spinning him around. The pistol in Bob Boy's hand raised. Ernie Bristol jerked back a step, trying to raise his pistol. Hart raised the pistol in his right hand, leveling it at Ernie Bristol.
Get your hook away from the pistol.
Hell, I can't do nothing with it.
Don't tell me this is because I arrested you that time way back.
No, it was for hire. Cleveland Phelps paid us.
I hate to ask you this, Ernie, but do you have any of that money left?
In my vest. Go on, take it. I won't be needing it. Them either. Damn, Los Pistoleros. That's what I get for trying to better myself.
Hart took the money from Hook Stevens' vest pocket in his hand. He folded the money and shoved it inside his bibbed shirt.
This feels wrong, Two Jack.
You asked him and he agreed. There's something that seems fair about it to me. Us using Cleveland Phelps' money to track down him and Los Pistoleros.
As they stood looking at the bodies, Sheriff K crept around the corner of the building.
You've caught us in the midst of robbing the dead.
Well, if they're not complaining, neither am I. You deputies always live like this?
No, Sheriff K, just since we got on this case. This one said Cleveland Phelps hired them to kill us. So maybe we're starting to get on the right people's nerves.
Quick Charlie Sims stepped into the caboose and closed the door. Red Loman looked up from the table where his personal weapons, a big Colt pistol, a leather-bound blackjack, and a small derringer, lay out in a row.
Something I can do for you, Quick Charlie?
Man, I live here too, remember?
Sims steadied himself against the sway of the caboose and stepped over to the back door.
I thought maybe you slept on the card table, a two-bit gambler like you.
Oh, I'm no gambler, Loman. A gambler plays the game of chance. I play the game of skill. Things like chess, billiards, poker, golf. But I guess you wouldn't know one from the other.
Ha! Poker's strictly a game of chance, Sims.
If you believe that, Red, then I would love to play some draw with you sometime.
You don't want no part of me playing poker. I'll tell you something else. You don't ever want to try me on a chessboard either, Quick Charlie.
Is that a fact? Well, I'm ready to play right now if you are.
I've got no time for your games, Grifter.
Why don't I give you a couple minutes? Let you get yourself ready.
The hell is that supposed to mean?
Quick Charlie didn't answer. Instead, he opened the door and stepped out onto the rear platform of the caboose. He reached up to the glowing lantern hanging from the edge of the roof and brought it into the car.
The hell are you doing with that? Don't tell me you're afraid of the dark.
Sims ignored him. He stepped to the end of the table, pulled out a wobbly stool, and sat down, keeping his left hand down on one of the three wooden legs to steady it. He set the lantern down on the tabletop and watched the steel wire handle tremble with the vibration on the rails.
We gotta talk about something, Loman.
I didn't ask you to join me, Sims. Go talk to your buddy JT. He might listen to your line. Not me.
See, that's the very thing we need to discuss. This bad attitude of yours. No wonder JT wants me to kill you.
What kind of trick is this, Sims? I'm ready for your move anytime you feel like making it.
It's no trick, Loman. And I'm not making a move. I'm unarmed. Priest has me on a bad spot. I'm just trying to get off it. Hoping maybe you can help me out.
Charlie placed a bearer bond on the table, unfolded it, and let Red Loman get a good look at it.
$50,000. This thing can't be real. It's not even made out to anybody.
Of course it's not real, Loman. But that's not keeping JT Priest from making me cash it for him. You get my drift? He's got a blue million of these things in his safe, all ready and waiting to be signed and cashed.
Red Loman studied the bond, not touching it yet, but his eyes gleaming more and more as they passed across the blank signature line.
How? Anybody can sign one of these and cash it. Does Mr. Mabry know about this?
Are you kidding, Loman? You think I'd be coming to you if this was something Mabry was in on? Oh, nah. This is JT Priest by himself, getting rich. Why do you think he's letting things get out of hand? What does he care? He tells me he's ready to drop Los Pistoleros and go on his own way with these babies.
What's this got to do with him wanting you to kill me?
Use your head, Loman. He's afraid you're gonna find out and tell Mabry.
Oh?
Yeah, but me, I want Mabry to know. Priest is gonna get me thrown into prison doing this, or worse. I don't want Mabry thinking I had a part in anything that's gonna come back and cause him trouble. I know he'll kill me.
So, you want me to get word to Mabry? Not let Priest know you've sold him out to me?
Exactly.
You say he's got how many of these bonds?
More than I'd care to sit and count. How many would you have if you ever got started printing them? There's a million or two at least, but that's not important. The main thing is, I don't want to be involved. I enjoy living too much.
Too scared to get rich? That doesn't sound like the Quick Charlie I heard about. Mabry says you would snake the devil out of hell. What do you want from me?
Well, if I were that slick, I wouldn't be wanting anything from you, would I? If this gets to Mabry, Priest is dead. That puts you up a notch into his place. All I want in return is out. Is it a deal, Loman? Well, is it, Loman?
Huh? Oh, sure. Why not?
Loman raised his right hand to shake on the deal, moving it up away from the pistol butt, the very thing Sims wanted him to do. Loman knew he'd made a mistake the split second Sims' hand clamped on his.
Check!
Sims' left hand snatched the short stool from beneath him as he rose up.
And mate!
You see? You weren't ready for chess at all.
Sims reached inside his belt and took out the key to his severed handcuffs. He unlocked each of them and dropped them on the table, then stepped over to the tool cabinet in the front corner of the car. He took out a small wrench, along with a nut and bolt he'd spotted a few days ago. At the table, Sims slipped the bolt through the two cuff chains and tightened it to the steel nut with the wrench. He tested the repaired handcuffs, then put them in his pocket. Sims picked up the lantern, lit it with a match, and turning the wick up high, stepped through the door and onto the platform between the caboose and the next car forward. Charlie steadied himself to the sway of the train, hung the glowing safety lantern on the front of the caboose, then stepped to the other platform, bending down below the platform and placing both hands on the coupling lever.
And there you go, Red.
Sims watched the caboose fall back away from the train, the glowing lantern growing dimmer and dimmer until it became a small diamond in the dark night. He turned, stepped inside the car, and picked up the pistol J.T. Priest had given him to kill Red Loman with from atop a wooden crate where he'd laid it. Then he reached out through the open door. Just then, the door at the opposite end of the car opened, and J.T. Priest came rushing in. He saw the sickened look on Quick Charlie Sims' face.
What's the matter, Sims? Have you got no stomach for killing?
I need a drink, J.T.
In a minute. First, let's go make sure that sucker's dead.
Believe me, J.T., you don't want to see it. Pretty messy.
Let me straighten you out on something, Sims. You work for me now. I say jump, you get to jumping. I put the gun in your hand and made you use it. I'm in charge. You're mine now. You got that?
Whatever you say, boss. I'll go back there with you, but I don't want to look at him.
Jesus, Sims. Is there something wrong with you?
J.T. Priest walked back through the swaying car with Sims right behind him.
What kind of sporting man are you? You can't stand the sight of a little blood.
Just weak, I suppose.
Sims dropped back a step when Priest reached out and swung the door open. He started to step out and cross over onto the platform of the caboose.
What the hell has happened here?
Bad news, Tuck. Looks like you just landed in the rough.
Why, you double-crossing son of a bitch! I'll kill you!
Priest's hand went to the pistol at his hip, but his expression turned from rage to stunned disbelief as his hand slapped against an empty holster.
More bad news, Tuck.
Sims pressed Priest's pistol under his own sweaty chin.
You're working for me now.
The passenger car, the Missouri and Illinois Nighthawk Express, was not crowded when Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth led the prisoner aboard at Little Red Springs. They nudged Briley Barnes into a center seat, then took seats on either side of him.
So, how long you figure we'll be getting into Chicago?
You should know, Barnes, you've made this trip before.
Nope. We came on horseback and in wagons.
You brought the shipment of firearms by wagon? You never mentioned that.
Didn't figure it was important.
From here on, Barnes, you make a tally of everything you didn't think was important and tell me every one of them. You understand?
Ugh. 3 hours passed before Red Loman lifted his swollen head from the tabletop and looked all around the quiet caboose. It took him a moment to realize the floor was not swaying beneath him. He struggled to his feet, staggered to the door, and threw it open. Darkness stretched long past the glow of the safety lantern.
Damn.
Slowly, he began to recall what had happened to him, and his memory became even more clear as his hand rubbed his chest and found the folded bearer bond in his coat pocket. He grabbed his pistol from the table, took the bearer bond out, and looked at it. Then he put it away again, this time inside his coat.
What the?
The floor of the caboose began to vibrate slightly.
Oh, hell.
He hurried back to the rear door and threw it open. The light of the oncoming train seemed to spring up out of the ground, boring toward him, much closer than the whistle had led him to believe. Inside the passenger car, Roth, Hart, and Briley Barnes all rose up at the same time, startled by the noise and the sudden forward lunge of the passenger car.
What's going on?
Cars bumped forward against one another until the slack caught up to the car they were on and jarred them forward. The passenger car slid and swayed, and for a long 10 seconds seemed dangerously close to toppling over on its side. But then it slammed back down onto the tracks. The engine of the train slammed into the stalled caboose. A hail of broken boards from the shattered caboose thumped down and skidded back along the car roof.
Lord God!
We've hit something!
Sullivan Hart struggled from his seat, dragging Barnes behind him.
Oh, let's take it easy!
They hurried to the rear of the car. Seeing a young woman rise up from the floor and sink back into her seat, hugging the bundled infant tight against her chest.
Ma'am, are you all right?
Hart reached a hand out to the blanket.
No!
But she jerked sideways, pulling the infant away from him.
Don't touch him! Leave him alone! Get away from us!
The bundle was lying crushed against her, as silent as stone. Hart pulled back from her and cast a glance at 2 Jack Roth.
Oh, no, ma'am. Here now. Let me have him.
No.
She swung up from the seat as if to run past him, but 2 Jack caught her by her cradled arm, stopping.
Get off! Turn me loose, you son of a bitch!
In her struggle, the bundle came halfway out of her arms.
No!
She groped for it with one hand as 2 Jack tried catching it. Then, the whole bundle came apart and spilled at her feet between her and 2 Jack Roth.
Oh my God!
Briley Barnes stared down at a floor full of money. He looked up to see the woman shaking out her long dark hair as she leveled the double-barreled Derringer pistol an inch from 2 Jack's eyes.
All of you, get back! I'll shoot you both, don't try me!
Easy, ma'am, we're both federal deputies.
I know what you are, I know who you are. You're the 2 lawmen hunting Charlie Sims and JT Priest. Now pick up the money and give it here. I'm getting off. Don't try to stop me.
Ma'am, a lot of things can happen here, but your leaving ain't one of them.
Then you're both going to die.
Lady, if I had a dollar for every time I've been shot by one of those pea shooters, I could retire on my own ranch. What do you want me to do, Sully?
Everybody hold still. Barnes, do you know this woman?
Yep. I saw her in Chicago with JT Priest. She's his woman. Her name's Kate something or other.
McCorkle. And I'm my own woman. I used to be with JT Priest. Next time I see him, though, he's a dead man.
You're the woman who was on the train when the 3 gunmen ambushed us in Little Red Springs, aren't you?
I was there. I didn't have anything to do with it. Neither did Charlie. I'm not going to see you hunt him down like a dog, either.
Ma'am, we are not hunting Quick Charlie Sims.
Yes, you are. I knew who you 2 were the minute you got on the train last night.
Lady, if you have any sense at all, listen to what he's trying to tell you.
Just then, the conductor stepped into the far end of the car.
Is everybody all right back here?
Kate McCorkle's eyes flashed toward the sound of his voice, and in that instant, Roth clamped his big hand down around the Derringer and pointed it at the floor. He wrenched the Derringer from her hand and tossed her over on a seat.
Oh!
We're all right back here.
What's going on there?
We're federal deputies. This is a matter of the law. What did we hit?
Oh, some damn fool left a crummy sitting on the track. Can you imagine that?
I'm getting to where I can imagine most anything. Tell the engineer we'll be out there to help as soon as we can check on our horses.
Hart turned back to Kate McCorkle as the conductor left.
Listen real close, Miss McCorkle. The ones we're looking for are J.T. Priest, Cleveland Phelps, and anybody else connected to Los Pistoleros. As far as Quick Charlie Sims is concerned, I'd personally like to twist his neck like a watch stem, but he is not the focus of this manhunt. You're going to have to take our word on it.
The fact is, lady, we believe Charlie Sims is trying in his own way to lead us to Los Pistoleros.
Oh?
That's right, Miss McCorkle. We really need to talk about some things.
As the railroad men stood staring at the wreckage, Red Loman moved forward out of the weeds. He ran in a crouch, his pistol in his hand, until he straightened up, standing with his back flat against the stock car door. He lifted the latch, then slid the door open just enough to crawl up inside. Loman moved to the nearest horse, picked up a set of reins from a tack peg on the wall, and prepared the horse for the road. He didn't take time to saddle the horse right then, but instead picked up a saddle from a rack and carried it as he eased the horse over to the door. Red Loman reached down and slid the boarding ramp out to the ground. Then he led the horse down and out into the grass. He slipped atop the big horse, the saddle hanging from his hand down the horse's side, and heeled the animal farther out into the darkness, away from the train.
Do you hear something, Sully?
The four of them stepped down to the ground from the train, Hart leading Briley Barnes while Roth helped Kate McCorkle. She fell against him as her foot touched the ground.
Oh!
Her hand slipped the derringer from his belt. But his hand caught her wrist, took the gun, and put it back in his belt, as if he'd been expecting her move.
Yes, I did, from back near the stock car.
Sullivan Hart drew his pistol, pulling Barnes along behind him. Two Jack Roth followed close behind. At the open door to the stock car, they spread out.
Whoever was here is gone now. So is one of those Kentucky racehorses being shipped north. If you want me to, I can be saddled up and tracking in about 5 minutes.
No, we've got enough to do right now. The only tracking I want to do is on the streets of Chicago.
The three-car train rolled slower and slower past the small farms and flat grasslands surrounding the city. Soon, the passing shadows of grain silos in the evening sunlight fell away, replaced by telegraph poles and endless wood-slat cattle pens. The cattle pens soon fell away, and tarred and metal shed roofs drifted by. Slowly, the train made its way into the Chicago railway station.
This is crazy, Sims!
J.T. Priest was sitting with his right wrist cuffed to the arm of his heavy chair.
For God's sakes, man, look at what we could do together. Just the two of us. To hell with Mabry and Los Pistoleros. We can be rich. Don't do this to me. Please, I'm begging you.
Game's over, Tuck. You played me, and you lost.
Earlier in the day, Sims had the engineers stop the train in the town of New Hope Siding. With J.T. Priest's pistol beneath his jacket, Sims had escorted him to the New Hope Siding's bank, where he'd stood back a couple of feet to the side, making certain Priest used his own name as he cashed a bearer bond in the amount of $20,000, a large amount for a small town bank. There was no way the teller would forget Priest's name or face if ever called upon. Priest knew it, and it had him worried. On the table lay a short stack of phony bearer bonds. That had worried him, too. But what had J.T. Priest worried the most was the string of dried human ears that Quick Charlie had taken from a lockbox beneath the bed in the sleeping quarters and pitched onto the table only moments ago. Two of those ears had once belonged to Federal Marshal Coleman Hart.
If this was a game, where's my chance to get even?
I never understood a man thinking someone owed him a chance to get even when the whole object of the game was to win in the first place. But you don't have to wait for my invitation. If you've got something left, pitch it on the table. I came here in handcuffs with the law on my trail and nothing in my pockets. Now, you liked seeing me that way, so I threw myself in the jackpot. Now you ask for a chance to get even?
What do you want from me, Sims? Just name it.
Well, I can't think of a thing. What have you got worth playing for?
The train finally ground to a halt. Sims had told him everything. About stuffing the carpet bag with fake bearer bonds and taking the money. About sending Hart and Roth a telegram telling them the train was headed to Chicago. The lawmen should be arriving any time. The one thing he hadn't mentioned was the bank job in Creed. Priest would have to bring that up on his own, and he was about to. Quick Charlie could tell.
Okay, Sims. Let's quit fooling around. I know what you want. I'll give it to you.
Oh? Really? What's that, Tuck?
The bank. The one in Creed. I set you up for it. I shot the guard with a Colt Thunderer, then dropped it on the floor. It had your name carved into the grips.
That was the best you could come up with? And you call yourself a sporting man?
Well, it worked. Now there, I admit it.
Oh, little good your confession does me, Tuck. What good'll it do me to tell the law you admitted it? Who's gonna take my word on it? Yeah, sorry, bad offer.
Jesus, Sims, listen to me. When Marbury sees the money's missing and hears about the bearer bonds, I'm dead. If Hart shoots me, or if he takes me back to Fort Smith to hang for murder, either way, I'm dead. I'll take my chances on a fast horse and a head start. I'll sign a confession for the bank in Creed, saying you had nothing to do with it. Take these cuffs off me. What do you say?
No, I don't think so. Those cuffs look good on you, Tuck. I'd rather wait and see who shows up first. The two deputies. Or some of Mad Dog Marbury's Los Pistoleros. Besides, it's been a long time since you lived on the run. I'd hate for you to get out there and starve to death. Cheat everybody out of killing you.
Come on, Sims, give me a break. I sign a confession, you're off the hook. I'll be on the run for murder anyway. A bank robbery charge isn't gonna make me much difference.
Okay, Tuck. Just to show you I'm a sport, but I can't promise the cuffs will be off in time for you to get out of here.
Then hurry it up, Sims. Get a pen and some paper.
Sims stood up, walked behind the bar, and brought back a pen, some ink, and a writing tablet. He dropped the items on the table and sat back down.
Start writing.
Sims reached into his shirt, took out the folded legal document he'd taken from the safe, and pitched it out on the table.
While you're signing, sign this, too.
Sign my shares of stock over to you? You're out of your mind.
Suit yourself, Tuck, but I won't take one without the other.
Damn you, Sims!
Priest reached out, snatched the folded document, and spread it out on the table. Kate McCorkle looked into Sullivan.
It's money I managed to put aside over the past year.
Yeah, you must have had one hell of a sugar jar.
Kate gestured at Barnes.
He's going to make me lose my temper. Believe me, he doesn't want that to happen.
There's close to $100,000 there, ma'am? Unless it's marked and proves to be stolen, we have no claim to it. Ain't against the law how a person decides to carry their money.
Priest has men everywhere. I didn't want to be spotted. I figured it was also a good way to keep my money close at hand. Who'd be watching for a woman carrying a baby.
Kate was not about to mention the other $200,000 she'd left in the leather valise and shipped off to New Orleans.
Well, it had us fooled. Two Jack, you want to take Barnes out to back and let him relieve himself?
Sure. Come on, Barnes.
Hey, I'm fine till we reach Chicago.
Come on, Barnes. Let's go.
Two Jack Roth raised Briley Barnes to his feet and pulled him forward down the aisle.
Ma'am, another couple hours and we'll be in Chicago. If I find out you and Quick Charlie Sims are pulling some sort of scheme, it's gonna be bad for him. You too, if I find out you're carrying stolen money. How far I investigate you and your money depends on how honest you're being right now.
I'm telling you the truth. I've broken no laws. Like I told you earlier, Deputy, Charlie has no idea I'm coming. He sent me south. He said he was taking Los Pistoleros down. If you know Charlie Sims, he usually does what he sets out to do.
I'm starting to believe that. And why didn't you go?
I couldn't. Not with everything that's hanging over his head. Charlie wouldn't do me that way if it were the other way around. For a long time, I thought he'd run out on me. Now that I know he didn't, simply put, I owe him, Deputy. Do you have to take him back to Fort Smith? Charlie didn't rob the bank in Creed. I'd stake my life on it. If he did, he wouldn't be going to all this trouble. He'd just disappear and you'd never see him again.
He's got to go back and stand trial. There's nothing I can do about that. But I agree, ma'am. If he shows me something to prove his innocence, I'll see to it the judge in Creed knows about it. But there's a matter of a guard being killed. It'll take some strong proof.
Listen to me. He wouldn't want me telling you this, but Quick Charlie Sims has never killed anybody in his life. He's never even shot anyone that I know of. He might use a gun as a prop, like some kind of stage actor, but it's all bluff, a part of his game. He'd never use one. That would be beneath him. If you understood, Charlie, you know what I mean. It's all a matter of how he can make things happen with his wit, not with a weapon.
I understand, ma'am, and what you're saying may be true, but in my job, somebody points a gun at you, you don't stop to consider whether or not it's a bluff. You can't risk it. I'll be honest with you, ma'am. My partner and I, not used to this kind of situation. We're only a couple of frontier lawmen doing the best we can. We get on a trail, and we follow it. Where that trail ends, odds are somebody dies. We've seen signs along the way that Quick Charlie is working with us, but it's not something we'll stake our lives on.
But you can give him some room, can't you? You told me yourself that if it wasn't for Charlie waving from the train the other day, you wouldn't have had to guess which way to go.
That's true. But at the end of every hunt, there's that time when the hammer cocks. At that point, doesn't matter who or what brought you there. I'll give Sims what room I can. But room will be scarce. You better understand that.
The rat's greasy tail whipped back and forth in the dirt. Its rear feet spread to steady the tin can.
Welcome to the big city.
Clifford Mallory drew his rifle from its boot, his horse stepping quarterwise out of the line of riders. Cleveland Phelps looked back over his shoulder.
Damn it, Clifford, put the gun away. Use your head.
Then Phelps looked back to Clifford's older brother.
Harvey, you told me he swore off a dope and regained his senses.
I never said I quit altogether. I just backed off some. Besides, anybody says opium is habit-forming is a damned fool. I've been smoking it for years. Look at me, steady as a rock.
Do something with him, Harvey.
Clifford Mallory had already taken aim at the feeding rat's rump sticking out of the can. But casting a glance at his older brother, Harvey, and seeing the look of disdain on his brother's face, Clifford Mallory uncocked his rifle and shoved it back into its boot.
Sorry, Cleveland. I see a rat, I'm bound to shoot it.
Not in this town, you don't. It's illegal. They don't even allow a man to carry a rifle around in public.
Raymond Cloud passed a glance all around.
What kind of sorry-ass law is that?
They don't have law here. What they have instead is a police department.
Damn. People stand for that.
Cleveland Phelps nodded, staring straight ahead from beneath his drooping hat brim.
You'll do some rat shooting before this job's over, Clifford.
Good.
Weaving around broken bottles and debris, the horsemen looked like apparitions from some different world. Their long dusters draped down to their boot wells, sunlight glinting off brass rifle butt plates and spur rowels. The line of horsemen moved forward at a walk along the narrow alley, bordered on one side by the rail yard. At the head of the meandering line sat Cleveland Phelps, followed by Raymond Cloud, then Otis Farnsworth. The Mallory brothers rode behind Farnsworth, and behind them, two hardened killers out of Texas, Max Dupree and young Jake Walls. When a long train swept past them, slowing in its approach to the station, it blocked their view of the rest of the rail yard. An idle porter stared from the crummy deck and offered a half-hearted wave. None of the men acknowledged him. Otis Farnsworth turned forward in his saddle, tugging his wide-brimmed Stetson down on his head.
I look at a train and all I see is a bank on wheels.
Speaking of banks, what's the word from Mad Dog Mulberry? We need to get a bank lined up.
As soon as we get rid of these lawmen, we'll get on to something. Mulberry wants us to help some new flunkies to lure some more rifles to the old English spread. Make up for the ones that burned up. We're gonna charge them a damn good fee for doing this work, you can bet on that. If J.T. Priest keeps messing things up, I'm apt to put a bullet in his eye, whether Mulberry likes it or not.
As Cleveland Phelps turned his horse away, he caught sight of the three-car train sitting on a siding track away from the main station rail.
I'll be damned, boys. Speak of the devil and he shall appear.
Looks like J.T.'s lost his crummy. Either that or Quick Charlie Sims managed to talk him out of it some way. I met that sucker once shooting dice in New Mexico. I wouldn't trust him no farther than I can spit.
But you shot dice with him? Who won, Raymond?
Go to hell, Otis.
Everybody knows better than to fool with Quick Charlie. Yet everybody does.
Not me. All I've got for him is a bullet in his teeth.
Then let's get on up there, Cleveland.
Not so fast, Clifford.
Cleveland Phelps raised a gloved hand, holding the others back. His eyes moved 50 yards across the rail yard to where he spotted the two deputies battered Stetsons as they stepped down from a train.
Let's take a minute here. Looks like JT might have himself a following.
That's too good to be true, boss.
Jake Walls saw the two tall Stetson hats himself.
It'd sure save us some time and trouble to shoot them right here and be done with it.
A gunfight? Right here in Chicago City? I don't know what they'd think of an idea like that in Texas, Jake. But I like it. I like it a lot.
After stepping off the train, Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth had spotted J.T. Priest's short train, minus its caboose, sitting on a siding track. Hart pulled Briley Barnes alongside of him.
All right, here's how we're gonna do this.
As he spoke, he loosened the cuff from his wrist, reached out, and snapped it around Kate McCorkle's.
Both of you stay close. If you try to make a run for it, I'll shoot Barnes in the knee.
Hey, why me?
Because I've never shot a woman, Barnes. So you make sure you don't let her talk you into doing something stupid. Ma'am, if Sims plays straight with me, he's got nothing to worry about. So help us make things go right, you understand?
I understand. What about my money?
Carry it. Two Jack, give Sims a little room. We'll try to see where he stands on this. But the slightest move out of J.T. Priest...
I know. It'll save us hauling him back to Judge Parker.
The fireman and the engineer stood looking back and forth between Quick Charlie Sims and J.T. Priest, noting the pistol on Sims' lap and the cuffs on Priest's wrists.
I knew it.
The engineer nodded toward J.T. Priest.
First time I laid eyes on this beady-eyed tabalard, I says to myself, that old boy is an outlaw. I never said it before, but something just told me you were a lawman the minute you stepped on the train. Wearing them handcuffs didn't fool me. I figured you was up to something, and I was right.
Strange how some folks can always tell.
So, what are you? A Pinkerton man? A railroad bull?
It's best you don't know. I'm counting on the two of you to go on about your business and keep quiet. Now, will you do that for me?
Hell yes. Just make sure the Hughes and Lindsay Company has our pay ready come the end of the week.
That who put you to work?
Yep. That's who hired us right here in Chicago. We'll get on out of here, and we'll not say a word about this.
Thanks, gentlemen. It's men like you who make my job easier.
Sims, you double-crossing snake! I did my part!
Priest gestured toward the signed confession lying folded on the table.
Now do like you promised and cut me loose!
I told you I couldn't promise you'd be uncuffed in time to...
That was a low-handed trick, Sims! Damn you!
Relax, Tuck. I checked the rail schedule. We shouldn't have long to wait.
He took out a gold watch, checked the time, and then put it away.
That's my watch, Sims. I kept it in the lockbox.
I thought I'd do you a favor, Tuck.
Sims took out five $100 bills, folded them, and shoved them down into Priest's vest pocket.
Look, I'm even paying you for it.
What's that for?
For the watch. Spending money, Tuck. Before you go into Parker's jail, you roll that money up nice and tight and hide it in the best place you can think of. You'll be surprised what $500 will do for you in a place like that. Believe me, as you're sitting there waiting to hang, the last thing you'll want to hear is a big watch ticking.
They won't hang me. Not on that confession. Not if I'm sitting here denying it, saying you forced it out of me. You fool. The only way it's worth anything is if I'm gone when they get here. I thought you'd have enough sense to know that.
Or if you're dead, Tuck. Don't you ever know when it's best just to keep your mouth shut, Tuck?